In association with Newsarama.com, welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. We continue our coverage of the FX convention, which took place last week in Orlando. And today we're going to give you a panel. And today we present a panel featuring three great artists, Phil Noto, Dan Brereton, and Jill Thompson, wonderful painters with very distinct styles. And they discuss their choice of choosing paint over the usual pen and ink that we see in comics. Word Balloon is brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com. They offer a huge selection of trade paperbacks, hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at up to 35% off, with orders over $50 receiving free shipping. Right now, you can get the Jonah Hex Collection, Origins, which includes art by Phil Noto. Regularly priced at $12.99, it's just $8.44. Also, Dead Boy Detective Digest, written and drawn by Jill Thompson. Regularly $9.99, just $6.49 at in-stock trades. And Dan Brereton's Nocturnals Volume 1 hardcover from Olympia Publishing. Regularly $29.99, it's just $22.49 at InStockTrades.com. And don't forget to visit their sister site, Discount Comic Book Service, at DCBService.com for all your pre-order needs. Major publishers are 40% off, and monthly specials are 45 to 75% off every month. Visit InStockTrades at InStockTrades.com and Discount Comic Book Service at DCBService.com. Now, this panel that we did at the FX convention, there was no AV guy running the soundboard. It was me, and unfortunately, I think Phil's microphone was a little low, and Jill's was a little low, so this is really the only panel where there's a little challenge there. Dan and I come through very strong, and I do apologize, but I think it was a great conversation and worth listening to. So,
well, it's time again for another Word Balloon podcast from the FX International Con, and I'm your host, John Sanchez, and I'm really excited to be here with three artists whose work I have admired for a long time. Returning guest and creator of the Nocturnals and one of my faves, Mr. Dan Brereton. Hi, Dan.
Hello, John.
This is like NPR. Next to Dan on the podium, we have the great cover artist and interior artist. I enjoy his interiors for things like the Black Bull stuff you did with Jimmy Palmiotti and your wonderful covers for such things as Birds of Prey, Mr. Phil Noto.
Hello.
And the creator of Scary Godmother and a fellow Chicagoan, and always pleased to see her at the cons, Ms. Jill Thompson.
Hello.
Now, I am curious because the three of you are painters with very different styles. And just as an initial question, I would ask, why painting as opposed to, you know, the regular pencil and line work you normally see in comics? So what led you to pursue painting, both as cover work and interior work, Dan?
Oh, that's for me?
Yeah, we'll start. We'll go down the line.
Because I couldn't do anything else good. I was going to art school, and I already knew I couldn't pencil or ink. I tried penciling some pages, and it felt weird to do stuff that you knew someone was supposed to ink over. And I can't do anything with a brush or a pen with ink with it in my life. Just back then, especially when I was in art school, I just stank. And I really loved to paint, though. I started painting in school, like, more than just dabbling with watercolors and coloring in your drawings. I was actually painting, and I loved it. I just fell in love with it. It made sense. And so I got this idea to do a painted project in school, my last year of school, at art school in San Francisco, after seeing the work of people like Kent Williams and George Pratt and Dave McKean. And they are all starting on their sort of fledgling painted comics at the time. Kent Williams was still working on Blood. Dave McKean was just starting Arkham Asylum.
Yep.
And they were all lined up at Comic-Con one year. And I got so depressed after seeing their stuff, I went home early. I literally went home early. And then that following semester, I thought, you know what, I'm going to do a painted comic book story. You know, that's what I want to do. And so I did it, and...
Was that Black Terror?
That was Black Terror, because I'd had some conversations with an editor at Eclipse about possibly revamping the character, but the publishers weren't interested in having me do it. But when they saw the samples I did in school, they hired me right away. So,
wow. So cool.
Thank goodness for painting.
Phil, same question.
During art school, I really got into oil painting and, you know, just kind of the illustration style of, like, you know, that late 80s, early 90s, like Kent Williams or Matt Laherne, and all very moody, you know, graphic stuff. And later on, when I actually got back into comics and when I actually started working in comics, I came from a more strictly illustration background and started trying to do like full paintings for everything and decided like, well, I don't know what I'm doing in terms of scanning these in and getting them ready to actually be printed. So I started taking shortcuts, doing a lot of it digitally, and then with the magic of Photoshop, like overlaying, you know, hand painted stuff that I had done to make it look real. You know, a lot of people are just like, oh, well, where's the now? I love that version of Freddy. Where's the original of that? It's like it's on, you know, 5 different sheets of paper in my studio. And, you know, I still do that. And as far as interiors go, like Dan was saying, like the Dave Keen and Tim Williams stuff. And, I mean, Electra Assassin was just like, amazing. And that, and I was like, oh, I want to do stuff like this, but, you know, it's like, I can't spend, you know, a year doing this book, so I would just, like, you know, just do mixed media, but just kind of manipulate it all digitally, and that way I could, you know, reuse different textures and stuff, and do it a little quicker, but, and that's what I still do to this day, like, I'll do half of it hand done, and then a lot of it digitally, and just combine it too. But, I still like to get my hands dirty a bit with clicker paint and stuff.
I remember the first time I know Joseph, but real quick, the first time we ever saw him fill stuff was on eBay. He did this Vampirella painting. We're like, who's this cool Japanese illustration guy we've never heard of?
I thought he was Japanese too.
He must be like an old Japanese illustrator guy who's just slumming around doing Vampirella art. We didn't know he was like this, you know, friendly Italian fellow who worked for Disney who was like, fairly disturbing or whatever. Like, what a shock.
The job, how about you getting into painting? What led you to painting?
Well, I fell into painting with my accident. When I first started wanting to draw comics, my aspiration was to pencil comics. With Pencil the Excellent, we have Terry Austin's ink me.
Okay.
That was my life goal at the time. And as I actually started working professionally, when I was in art school, up until I had gone to art school, I had never used any other medium. I mean, I actually had dabbled with oil paints by trying to flow along with Willie Melisander, my parents got me, you know, painting supplies pretty much based on what they watched along with me. I am not an oil painter. I understand the process of it. I do not have the patience for oil painting. I should probably give it another try. People ask my try at 11. But when I went to art school, up until that point, it was like a number 2 pencil with like a hard pink eraser on the back of it and either notebook paper or whatever I got in high school art class. You know,
sure.
Our school was a college prep school. It wasn't really, didn't have very much liberal arts involved at all.
Okay.
Like, you could either take gym speech for art.
Okay.
And I started because I loved art, and I figured it was my chance to, you know, have this giant art school experience. And so I used what was available to me there.
Which high school? I got to ask because we're both from Chicago. So.
Oh, Nazareth Academy.
Oh, very cool. I was a new Trier guy.
Oh, okay.
We had a healthy prep.
I think our school was big as your, like, half your freshman
year. Yeah, I know. Sorry.
Yeah.
And actually, your art school, you had some cool.
AAA, yeah.
Well, you had a couple. Yeah, exactly. You had some.
Well, then I went there.
Okay.
And I went to American Academy of Art in Chicago, and I went there only because as eventually,
I'll get around
to your real
question. Oh, no, it's cool.
I went there because I would go to comic conventions all the time with my sketchbooks full of, you know, Dazzler and X-Men drawings and all this kind of stuff. And I met some artists. I met Bill Linia.
Cool.
I met Bill Reinhold. I met Mitch O'Connell. Another artist named Lennon Dunkel. Actually, Jeff D. There were a lot of guys that lived in Michigan that were doing gaming at the time.
Okay.
And Bill Linia worked for TSR.
Yes.
And Jeff D. worked for, Jack Herman did Bill and Digital Envy. And Bill was doing some game modules and stuff for that. And I would show my art. And I was the girl at the comic convention. And then I was also, even, you know, like more specialized, I was the girl who wanted to draw comics. But I showed them all my work. Bill Reinhold actually sat me down and gave me a critique. in a really a wonderful way. He made me so excited to go back and change everything that I had done because I didn't really know how to draw anything well. But he showed me. And then the next, it was at these tiny little mini conventions, I would come back and show him what I did. He said, you should go to art school. Don't think you can learn how to draw comics from looking at comics. You know comics, you like comics, you're going to get that. But go to art school. You really should go to art school. So I listened to him. Went there, terrified that I was going to be not accepted because I was not good. And when I got there, I was actually better than a lot of people that were there. And I was surprised when we got to our life drawing class. It was like I had kind of a better grasp. And I was like, hey, wait a minute. Think all you need is 5 grand.
I think you can't get in. I realize anyone who can sign their name and pay their bills can get into art school.
My first freshman life drawing class, I remember this guy came in with all these Iron Man drawings. And he was like, all he wanted to do was comics. And I wasn't even reading comics at the time. I was like, wow, look at this guy in his Iron Man drawing. It was like that. Like, he couldn't, I mean, you know, a naked lady gets up on stage and after he's, like, you know, done being astonished with a naked lady, he couldn't draw her. So he's like,
yeah. I mean, well, I had to learn how to draw. I mean, this is the best part of my life. I'll get to the painting, I swear.
No, you're good.
The best part of my life drawing class is I had a fine artist, his name was Arvidas Algemeinus. And he was, I think he's Romanian, and his family like was just escaped from World War II because the Nazis were trying to close it out, you know?
Yeah.
And he came, and he mostly did fine art paintings with Native Americans.
Oh, wow.
But he was taught life drawing 3 days a week.
Okay.
And he would come in, and his first thing was we all had our big sheet of paper, and we had our charcoal and all this stuff there, and he was just a live throw figure. And we had 3 hours to do it because it was class from 1 to 4.
Okay.
Of course, most people done in 15 minutes. Thinking it was a tiny little drawing on the top of their picture. I think it was closing. He takes it away. Then once because everybody's pretty much done by the first break period, except the kids that are coming back for because there are people of all ages coming back for their second year of school. They knew this was what Al's trick was. Then of course, then he's going to show you how to do it properly.
Okay.
How to like measure the figure, you know, by eye or with thumb, and I was going to mark out how many heads tall it is on the paper, and then teach you how to sketch in the figure. He keeps your old drawing. Then at the end of the year, he has the model with the same pose that you did, and then he shows you, because you might think, after going through the whole year of school, that you haven't learned anything, but your picture on the first day you started school, and your picture on your last day of starting school, and you realize,
wow,
you know, like, I didn't have fucking drawing. So, like, all my instructors were really amazing like that. My fundamental teacher, the reason this will get to the painting, he gave us tons and tons of homework, and he said, you will only have, I'm giving you all this gifts, you're going to have 3 hours of homework every night. Of course, I listened to him, because I always listen to teachers and authority, and I was done, like, halfway through. And he would go behind you, if you were, like, working on something, he would come in and he would just tear it up.
Tear it up?
In the middle of what you were doing. And he told us he had all these still lifes set up against one side of the wall with different light sources, and he said, just pick one because you're going to do a one-color watercolor.
Okay.
Of this. And he said, watercolor is impossible. If no one gets it, you're going to do this 10 times before you get it right. You're going to hate it. But by the time you leave my class, you're going to love it. And if ever he said you stop working, he like would come up and think, I guess you don't have enough to do, is what he would say, and like give you more assignments.
Okay.
So I remember sitting up there sketching out my still life, and I'm watercolor, didn't know what it was. Oh, look, it comes in a tube. And you get your the proper brushes and everything, and I remember watching his first demonstration, and I took to it really, really, this is so easy. It's not supposed to be. Ten times. I would sit and sweat when he would walk behind us, and finally, I realized I was looking at my drawing. I don't want him to tear this up. I love this. It's right. I know it's right. It had happy watermark accidents, all the things that it's supposed to have, like direct black. And I was like, and then he would walk behind, and finally one day he walked behind. He stopped. He goes, "Stop working, darling. Stop." And you got it.
Wow.
Wow.
And I remember I feel like this weird relief from Mr. Popovich, but I was so terrified. And when I entered school, I loved comics, and I found something that was not difficult for me to do. I never thought I would be painting comics, because still I was expecting I would be doing pencil and inking and stuff, and I happened to mix the two together by accident. It happened when I wasn't I think probably when I was working on Sandman was the first time I started messing around with my free time by just kind of painting characters. Or I would do, actually, no, I would come to conventions sometimes, and I would do for $10, I would paint pictures of people.
Yeah. Wow.
In Artist Alley. Like, and it was actually real painting at the time. Like, I hadn't, because I consider what I do now not really painting, I'm illustrating. And even now, more than I was before.
I turned 20.
but I was doing, like, you know, there was a holding line, no nothing. It was like
a
big, a 1-inch, you know, flat brush, and I would, like, do, you know, Supergirl, you know, like some nice painting of it. Or somebody could, can you have a picture of my daughter? Like, yeah, sure. So technically, it was $5 a piece.
Yeah.
It was a real watercolor paper and everything, but I was, like, so sweet. And sometimes they would make hundreds of dollars. And I realized, how much?
Hundreds of dollars.
Well, yeah.
But if you divide it all by 10, like, how much am I doing in a 2-day convention?
Yeah,
like,
your fourth thing.
Yeah.
Good practice.
I would never be able to get it done that same way, but so I kind of just started messing around with it, and I knew it was something that I liked to do, and I never really kind of thought to do it as comics until I was going to do Scary Godmother. I knew other people did it. I knew Alex Ross did it. I knew, you know, Dave McKean, Kent Williams. I was just like, I can't do that. It's so great. I've never really do anything like that. And then finally, when I actually had my own idea, it was the first time I decided, like, I wanted it to look a certain way, and the only way it was going to happen was if I used watercolor. You know, it still is more like comic. It's cartooning. To me, it's more cartooning, but it's just like full illustrated comic book story instead of like me doing painting. Like,
yeah. Well, and I want.
Landscaping.
Well, and I want to ask about that because especially when you're doing interiors, all three of you, that's got to be different than approaching a portrait or a cover even. And I'm curious, because of page composition and your storytelling and stuff, I mean, so is it hard to kind of then make that, I mean, you know, is it a different head, obviously, doing that kind of painting?
There's a lot more work involved in interiors because you're looking at, like, you know, multiple backgrounds, if you're really spending time trying to make it look really good, essentially every page, every panel on every page can become its own cover.
Certainly.
And that's just...
A lot of work.
The way I approach a page in general, I don't always do it, and I break a lot of the things that I say that should be in essence in every page. Because each panel has its own composition, but it's part of a larger composition. And really, like, the lights and darks should all affect each other. And also, to me, the word balloon is another character in each panel.
Absolutely.
And it should be placed only to move the action along and move the unspoken story along. Not to detract from the art, but to enhance it in some way, because even though it's laid on there, and I think the word balloon itself can be a character, you can set a voice, you can really set, like, if someone's sad, like, I use, like, really overt manipulation of word balloons if I'm doing my own, like, if it's sad or crying, I can make it trippy, or it's really cold, if, you know, the word balloon was icy, or use real shouty letters, or cursive, you know, like, Mark Temple did it really great in this Gregory Fat Boy, the mom and the daughter speaking cursive letters, like, guess what, I get an answer today. You know, and you knew the kind of, you got a sense of the character's personality.
Certainly.
From the lettering. And especially since I'm manipulating everything that I do and designing the whole page, it's like each panel is a painting, but that painting has to fit into a larger painting. And it all has to have a flow, and it also has to, like, advance the story forward. You know, it's tons of work. Each page that I do, I really end up doing 5 times. Rehearse, I sketch it out. Then I tighten it up so I can paint. Then I go through and I do all the painting, and then I do outline things. So it's almost like inking. It's like I'm doing a 4-color printing process all by myself.
Wow.
And then, you know, I clean it up, and it's like, consent blue. Usually when I use pencil, all I have to do is one time. And just set it on down the assembly line. But it's so much more gratifying to have it, like, finished.
Yep. And are the publishers open to, you know, because it seems sometimes that what the audience clicks to as far as painting goes, you know, I think there are beautifully painted books that just seem to not quite fit, you know, the project or whatever. I mean, are the publishers cool with the, you know, is it always easy to find interior stuff? And actually, I should say, do you guys have the time, as you said, Phil, to really put into it and really do a lot of material? And Dan, you too. I mean, you know, Jill, just you talked about how, you know, much process goes into truly doing your stuff.
I think it depends on the project. I think there's, like, things like, you know, of course, you know, Jill's superior government stuff. I mean, it's, you couldn't imagine it any other way. And
yeah.
I think our problem with a lot of editors is, like, they don't have that artistic eye, and they think, oh, I want to class up this, you know, book, this, you know, Gotham City special, and it won't do it, and all, you know, painted. And it's like, Batman's on a few pages of it, and the rest of it's, you know, about some family living, you know, inner city Gotham or something. It's
yeah.
like, okay, well, you know. And I think that happens a lot, especially after that big, like, blast, you know, with all the Alex Ross stuff. It's like, oh, well, you know, this
right.
is going to sell up crazy if it's painted. And it's like, no, it has to be the right story.
Well,
sure.
It has to be Alex Ross.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, yeah. Yeah. Well, true, too, because, I mean, I've seen some horrible painted things that the guy spent, you know, probably a good year and a half painting it.
To me, it's like, Alex is so, like, it's a crazy fine line, especially about that type of material. If there's, you know, realistic-looking superheroes. You know, some people do something that's, like, extremely, you know, I guess photorealistic or airbrushed, and, and then Alex is, you know, is all photo-referenced. Sometimes it's, like, the style is what makes it distinctive. Because I'm drawn more to Alex's than I am to some other supposed realistic superhero artists. Because to me, it's not like, oh, look at this character who's real or something, or like a person. It's like, stylistically, it has to work for me. The same way, it's like, I don't enjoy every painted comic, and I don't
sure.
hit it just because it's painted. It's like, if the story is suited to the style, then it's going to work. But it's not like,
yeah.
like you say, you know, this Iron Man story needs
uh-huh.
to have some slick airbrush, you know, art, but then it's going to look good. But it's like, then, to me, it's like, it's too busy. I can't stand to look at this page is hurting my brain because it's got too much going on. There's not real painting going on. It's like, it's all technical.
So like,
it's computer color.
So, you know, I like when someone's working in a panel, it's like, it didn't need to do all that. Now I want to take things out.
What
I'm done.
I'm trying, like, yeah, well,
that's
yesterday, I screwed up a sketch, or 2 days ago, I screwed up a sketch. And it wasn't screwed up, well, I was painting, because it's like a black and white painted drawing.
Okay.
And I was freaking out, because, and in the room, I'm muttering to myself that I want to redo it, and I start redrawing something. I redrew a completely different drawing, and I start locking in paint, and I go, that's it, Jim, that's it, this is painting, man, you're painting here. And I feel, I go, that's illustrating, stop drawing, man, don't draw with a brush. You go, paint, this is painting, just lock it in. And it's like, simple, don't overwork it, because if you can just go in there and noodle it to death, and I'm like, hey, who are we talking to?
Come over and do that to me.
Well, it happens all the time, it's like, because sometimes I feel like I've been overworking everything I do of late, the projects that I'm working on, it's like, that should have been done ages ago. Why are you going back into it? Is
yeah.
it the paper? Is something not taking, like, it's drying and it's not the way it looks like you're putting it down, and you go back into it, now I'm screwing it up, and just go to the next one,
go ahead.
Doesn't look, you know, like, once it's done, it doesn't look like it's messed up, but it's like, it's supposed to be immediate as it's supposed to be, and it's like, I have to get into that mindset again, and maybe I have to, you know, when I'm done with a certain project, go away and, like, take a very big piece of watercolor paper, stretch it out, go paint a landscape or something with like 1-inch flat airbrush with like my left hand or something to like train my brain how to go back and just
yeah.
block in light and shadow without being so wed to a line.
I want to know what you're all currently working on. I've had Dan on recently, and Dan, you know, you knocked me out with the Iron Fist annual that you did with Howard Chaykin and all the other guys as my possessive. Well, you both were on that book, though.
Yeah.
You were both in that book, I should say.
Oh, great.
Stop.
I like it with that fraction.
Well, there you go. There you go. Because, yeah, that was the script right. I understand.
If you're working with Howard Chaykin, you know you're working with Howard Chaykin.
And you would know because
it's
real killer.
I didn't have any of those things happen to me during the summer at all.
See, now, Dan's playing hurt guy, but the two of them.
On a book that Howard was working on, where I didn't have to get yelled at, you're ready to buy him. That was cool.
Stop it. I know for a fact that Howard is a big Dan Brereton fan and loves collaborating with
only
him. So
when
that's
he's not around me.
Okay. Because Thrill Killer is still something that both guys are very proud of.
I love working on that one.
So.
Except when he yelled at me. Howard never yells.
He used to.
He called me back and apologized. He said, don't use this against me because I apologize to you. That's the most psychotic thing I've ever heard in my life.
So what do you got coming up?
I'm currently doing Infinite Horizon with Jerry Duggan. It's a 6-issue miniseries we're doing for Image, and I am working on a Superman Supergirl project for DC right now.
Wonderful.
Be coming out later this year sometime, and doing some backup stories for the Wildstorm Universe books.
Oh, cool. And Infinite Horizon, I know for a fact that my comic book store always sold out.
What's Infinite Horizon about?
Please,
it's,
yes.
A retelling of the Odyssey.
It's an Odyssey.
Near future with a military man trying to get home to his wife.
Isn't that what an Odyssey is?
Phil Wilson act. It's buried in itself.
Oh, why would Howard yell at you?
Because the characters on the cover of our book had guns in their hands, and then they never had guns in their hands in the interior. I brought it up to our editor, Archie Goodwin, and he goes, that's a good point. And so I brought it up to Howard, and Howard said, I'll put Robin blowing a midget on the cover if I think it'll sell.
There we go. How would that feel? No, honestly, I'd love to know about what you're working on.
Quoting.
Let's see, right
if
now
you can,
I'm working my way through 4 pre-interval graphic novels for HarperCollins.
Oh, excellent.
It's called Magic Trixie.
Cool.
And they're all 92 pages of painted material, but it's going to be like soft cover, digesty, manga-y size. Then, my own makeup, it comes out from HarperCollins Children's. The first one comes out in July.
Excellent.
And
should be working.
Yeah, exactly. You poor thing. Why are you here? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm making her late.
I've had a lot of stuff this year that is like just from vagrants and my broker movement. But I'm nearly done. 20 pages from the end. So
wow.
Excellent.
I have to kick
from
the second one. And then I really have to just immediately. I've got the script in third room, and then I have to just jam right into drawing it and painting it. And then make up the poems. I know generally what it's supposed to be about, but we'll see. And then I'm supposed to be doing something that I know about and writer knows about from DC, like the Superman Project.
Okay.
That might be a random hospital. I'm not sure.
Oh, wow.
That's what people keep telling me, but it's with a random job. Yes.
This is painted, so.
Yes.
That's asked. Okay.
Writer name.
With writer Josh Elder.
Oh, okay.
I think I'll mail order Ninja.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I'm aware of Josh, absolutely.
Yeah, he's in Chicago, so one day I absconded with his idea. We were all out somewhere, and I was talking to him, and he said, I always wanted to do his favorite character, and he wanted to do something, and he threw out a germ of an idea, and said, oh my God, this is great. It's just a fantastic, it's a classic, it's timeless, you can make it be printed forever and ever, and it's really good, and it reaches kids, and oh, you should do this. I want to paint that. And I want it to be like this. And it should just be like big, open pages of how Superman and the Earth were. And then we can do this. And we can go there and we can go there. And I think, oh, I'm sorry, I just wrote your story. Oh, what?
Keep going.
Well, find out if anyone wants to do that. And tell them all the famous. And, he didn't mind stepping all over his toes.
Written
and told us his story. And he was,
written and illustrated.
So he just said, Jill, just send it on over.
Jill Thompson.
I didn't write it at all, but I made sure that because he told me the story that he wanted to write, and I just made I made sure it had every image I want to draw in it. It's like, okay, please write that down. Do this, so I can
jump. She wrote it.
No, I didn't.
Introduction
by Josh Elder.
He's
a really good writer.
Yeah, actually, he's a great guy. I met him at Comics Revolution, and actually, he told me about. And was really excited.
Before, he's like, everyone knows when you can start. And I was
painted comic book artists can't write, so you have to always have a writer.
Tell them you're not able to write it right now, and then I can work on it while I'm working on this. And it's like, but if you want to wait till I'm finished with 2 more 93-page graphic novels. That's kind of stupid, but let me, eke out little bits at a time so that I have 3 things going on at once. because like adding another painted page in amongst these painted pages is not going to.
You have a hard time juggling projects, like having your head be in one story and then your head be in another story, because I can't do
that. Yeah, that's both of you, yeah.
Sometimes I can. Yeah. Well, I guess I can do it. And then and the other thing that I'm probably going to do, Evan Dorkin and Sarah Dyer and I are going to do some more stories.
Great. Oh, that's excellent.
That's a lot of good stuff. How many pages a day can you crank out?
Only one.
Honestly, I would like to know, honestly, all three of you, how long does it take to generate it?
Yeah, because if I finish one every day, I started out doing one and I can finish it one day, but then, you know, life sometimes gets in the way. If I have nothing else distracting me, I can sit down and get a page done.
But so
I
have a mind book with your husband?
Never.
Okay.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I
Brian Azzarello, for those who don't know.
Brian Blumenthal, it never happened.
Okay.
Why? Because he doesn't want to work with you in that type of relationship, or because he doesn't...
Well, we both said, because everyone kept asking us when you guys work together, and we figured we just kept saying no, and, you know,
well, it happened to Alan Baldwin and Kim Basinger in Getaway.
Sean Penn and Madonna.
Shanghai Surprise.
Yeah, Sean Penn and Madonna.
Oh, God, aim higher. I don't blame you, Joe. What's up?
No, I mean, there are things that I like. I mean, he helps me with stuff that I do, and, you know, like, I don't know if I'm my 2 cents in on stuff he does. Like, you know, I don't get what you're doing. It's like,
it has to be much together time.
Well, we have a lot of together time, too. It's like, I mean, unfortunately for him, I now have a studio in the house. You know, if anyone wonders why, you know, I'm going to come out more often, because he wants to strangle me because I'm in the house. Because we work completely differently, but we're in completely different ends of the house. And so it's not like we're on top of each other and things like that. So, but it's nice to be able to have something different to talk about or to ask advice for instead of, you know, I don't know if I could deal with, you know, him being over my shoulder saying, you know,
no
overhead shot in New York City. You know, it's like, sure. Well, that's not what I was thinking. Shut up.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
This is, you know, you hand, but he never does that with the artists he
works on. Okay.
But
well, he can't because they're so many thousands of miles away.
More familiarity, and he was telling them to take a
break. But it's not that you have an aversion
to crime. No, it's crime. In fact, you know, I was way back 2 years ago, I was talking with Frank Miller. About, like, I wanted to work with him on, a female protagonist set in Chicago in the 1930s, kind of like Bella Street from,
Perry Mason.
Perry Mason. That a girl. The one that actually had to do all the legwork to solve the mystery, and Perry just walk in and go,
oh, wow.
She and Paul.
I was going to say, exactly.
Like,
yeah.
And you're like, oh, Perry Mason. No, Della's the one running around.
Yeah, it's Della. Why don't you take care of that and get that deposition?
You know, come back to, because he was hanging out with Brian, and I was like, you should, and if they really enjoyed each other's company, and I was like, you should come back here. We go to Chicago Historical Society, we can go take a lot of reference, and he's like, you know, write something, and I would love to do it. So he was all over that, and you know, that'll never happen because he's...
Now he's busy in Hollywood.
Things, but he was all for it. He was like, no, that would be great, I would love to do that. And I was like, someone recorded it so I can tell
them. Well, it'll be on the podcast. Can I embarrass you for a second and say how much I enjoyed the little feature you did in Batman Black and White of the Guide to Gotham?
Oh.
It was so... Oh, absolutely. It was so cool. It was... I don't know if it's collected. I'm assuming it is.
Yeah, and the Black and White. The Guide to Gotham.
Yeah, the specific... It was... Tell them what it was about.
It was just like, you know, like in your...
It's a brochure.
Climb out in New York, in Central Chicago, or Orlando. It's like, or the hotel guide. It's like where to go, what to do, what to see in the city. And so I did one of those guides and wrote all the copy and did the black and white pictures. And it was like kind of all Gotham centric, where.
I like the cop coffee shop.
Oh, see, cop shop was a coffee shop I came up with. I wanted to do a theme restaurant like that, where, you know, you have to wait in the holding cell for your table. Richard Melvin of London Entertainment.
Main Manor, or, you know.
No, there are things. The Gotham Conservatory was funded by a generous grant from the Markaway Foundation, I didn't put. Well, no, these are all the things that you would see, like if you were
like a tourist.
You would want to check out where all the crazy people are.
Well, yeah, but like
if you look at them on Supermax.
Yeah, exactly. It's like
in Chicago. There's a great big. There's a correctional facility right down in Loop. Do not let people visit there.
Yeah, it's not for tourists. It's for criminals.
So it's more I want you thrown in my face.
Yeah, yeah, you say yeah.
I think one of the things that I mentioned to the Gotham Conservatory that was, you know, recently, you know, certain areas being renovated, you know, because, and they showed a security camera footage of, like, Poison Ivy and Batman fighting. I think that's the only time you saw Batman in the whole thing, and it's like, I think one of my favorite drawings I've ever done was a little black and white thing with Batman in blue. He's fighting, and Poison Ivy's got, you know, all the plants going all over him. Because I'm a fan of the kind of, like, Kobe classical Batman, where, like, you have Kelly style.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like you could make it yourself, but it still looks threatening. And what else they have? Like different restaurants that you could go to. And the Cop Shop was one where it was really close to, I guess, you know, the real police station, but it's all police officers.
What kind of comments were people reading in the Gotham City?
And then there was a shop where, like, just I don't know.
Right. At the restaurant, you had that great photo of Gordon just kind of enjoying a cup at the bar like you would see at a restaurant and stuff of, like, famous people that, like, actually frequent the place. Sure. Well, even here at the hotel that we're all staying at, there's, like, celebrity photos. But, yeah, it was just Gordon just kind of, like, sitting there with his, like, cup, like, yeah, hey, I'm enjoying this place.
Anything with Bruce in it? No.
Oh, no. Like, the Gotham City was the strip, and it was things like, you could go, like, to one of these hipster clothing boutiques, but everything was made from discarded hero items that were found and scavenged amongst, you know, like, you'd find, like, a part of, you know, the utility belt or something. And,
yes.
Or some weird fabric that was, you know, from villains. Because
they're costumes,
like, no proceeds from any incarcerated villains could be used. It's simply that, like, famous killers and stuff can't benefit from their prison drugs and stuff like that. So any of the stuff that they had was used. And this one, you know, hipster artist was turning it into, you know, handbags and, you know, dresses and all sorts of things like that. It was
cute.
And theater, what kind of theater you could see.
Yeah, it was awesome. No, and honestly, check it out in the trade.
It was esoteric, and I liked that I did it. And it was mostly writing and a lot of spot illustration.
And I'm telling you, it's awesome. And I want to embarrass Phil because New West in particular, and I always love your Birds of Prey covers, and they always had a very paperback kind of feel to them. But I, as far as interiors and stuff, I really enjoyed that New West story you did with Jimmy Palmiotti.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun to do, which is something because usually, like, just about every project I do, 10 pages in, I'm like, I wish I did this in a different style. This is really getting boring and taking too long. In New West, I actually, like, the whole time, I'm like, oh, no, this is good. You know, it looks good. It's easy for me to do, and, it, you know, I'll get everything done on time.
That and the, the daughter of basically James Bond, and if James Bond and Emma Peel had a daughter.
Oh, yeah, Beautiful Killer.
Beautiful Killer. Yeah,
that
those
was
are.
The first thing, that was my first interior thing that I did. I had no, I mean, it was literally like somebody, like, throwing a kid, baby into the water, like, now swim. And it was just like...
Well, you swam, man. No, you swam pretty good, man.
It was called Beautiful Killer. It was an old Black Bull and throws up, like, the Wizard of a comic imprint Black Bull.
I think you can, from what I heard, some of the stores are still, like, stocking the trade paperbacks of it.
It was rumored to, I know, one of those movies for a while.
Jessica Alba was attached to it, and
one of those.
They don't tell me anything.
There you go. But, yeah, that's awesome. And, Dan, I will further embarrass you and say how much I love the Nocturnals. And,
thank you.
And I'm glad that they're back. And, I
do call Nocturnals sometimes when they let me. Also turned down work at Lucasfilm on the new trilogy to do Nocturnals, too. I thought I could stop doing Nocturnals or follow George Lucas's vision, or keep doing my vision. So,
on blasphemous movies.
I wanted to ask if anyone in the audience had any questions for these guys, so please, let's take a moment.
What's everybody really here for?
Yeah, what are you really here for?
Oh, these the ones in the back? I think they're coming to learn about how to break into comics, am I right?
Is that the next panel?
That's the next panel.
Yeah, okay.
Matt Kint, Art Balthazar, and actually, we could start with you guys if you'd like to, if you haven't
tips. I'm a bad person to ask.
first you have to put together a kit. It involves masking, duct tape, a taser. Yeah.
Brian has actually had a good answer to that.
That's a true answer.
I'm guessing you might know, so I'll let you.
His answer is get published somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have a resume if you walk in the door.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Bring a finished product, yeah.
Yo, create a TV show and work on that for a couple of years. And
yeah, that helps. That helps.
Well, to get published in comics, depending on what you want to do, I can't speak for you know the entire writing aspect because I started simply drawing comics before I wrote and on that comic. But you have, you just have, like any other profession, you have to show a level of professionalism. You should have a certain resume. You have to be able to show that you can do the job that they're looking for, for doing art. That means that you can take a story that someone else has written, whether or not you think it's great or not, and you can adapt it to the comic page in a good and timely fashion, and that you can take editorial direction, which sometimes is stepping over a lot of people's toes. You know, it's like if in the Superman story you're supposed to draw X, Y, and Z, and you do that, but then the editor appears from the higher-ups that, oh, we can't have Superman do that because it's going to happen in the movie and we have to take this out. And you start, you know, like, there's a battle you're fighting for absolutely.
If they don't tell you that reason, like, just say you can't do
which is, which goes back to the thing earlier that I was mentioning about my fundamentals teacher coming back and tearing your stuff up. He wasn't just being a dick, which we all thought he was, pardon my...
No, you're cool.
he was, but this is going on the internet, and the children are all over. He was telling you that what he was trying to train us to do, and my school was trade school, he was training you to be an illustrator. And it doesn't matter if you work all week on the cover or Dr. Pepper campaign. At the end of the day, at 4:45 on a Friday, the client can come back and go, oh, you know, I was hoping that we could have put a bunch of flowers in there. Can you just add those? No. Oh, then do it over.
Wow.
But I've done this for all week. Oh, what do you mean I have to do it over again by Monday? You know, it's like, because yes, you have to. And, you know, comics is technically a different form of commercial art in its most basic form. And it's more artistic form. When you're creating your own thing and you have a bit more control over everything that happens, there's a bit more give and take. But what you have to be able to do is show that you're professional, that you're there to do the job, you're willing to do the job. You can take some direction. You can also filibuster a little bit about what you need. But you're there to provide a service for the company that you're working for. And remember, you're working for a company.
They're the author.
And they are the controller and creator of those characters. If you want to do, you know, you may have your favorite Batman story that you want to write your whole life. That doesn't mean that they're going to be willing to publish it.
And if they do, it's their story.
It's their story. Because everything you do for a major company is work for hire.
So get self-published first.
And if you are self-published, ready to get self-published, I mean, what I always tell people that want to draw comics is that, you know, you can't tell everybody that, you know, ooh, look, this is going to be a week to draw. You're pretty much saying, thanks a lot, you know, come again, because nobody wants to know that your one drawing took you a week to do. They need to know that you can do pretty much a page of comics a day, because it's a monthly schedule, you're working with other people, the slower you are, the more off schedule they get. So it's like, especially if you're working with an inker and a letter and a colorist, it's more of an assembly line process. And not to take all the fun and life off it for you, but it's, you have to understand that it is, you're working for a company and it's a job, and you know, you can fit yourself into that niche very, very nicely, but you just can't walk in thinking it.
There you go. I mean, and that's the art perspective. And
that's an artistic perspective. And
I know Matt and Matt Kitt and B. Claymore are going to be elaborating on that. And I hope we're going to have Art here today. I don't know if Balthazar's coming as well for the rest of the panel. I'm assuming he's going to be late. But, yeah, and before we transition, I'm glad that these guys have the opportunity to answer some of these guys' questions as well as far as breaking in. But while we have them up here in our closing minutes, I'll just ask if there are any specific questions for Dan, Phil, or Jill, if... From those of you who were here earlier. Sir?
Well, I got a question. Joe doesn't mind. I hope you don't. If you get this asked too much, I can understand if you don't. What was it like working on Brief Lives and working with Neil in general?
What was
sure.
Working on Brief Lives and working with Neil Gaiman? Well, it was all too brief. It was probably, I'm glad that it had to, my arc had to end because I've gone on to do other things, but I would have been really happy just working with Neil because script was really easy to work from. He always wrote something that, he tends to tailor his scripts towards his artist's strength, so he will write something that you want to draw. Or he'll tailor his story might be the story that he wants to tell, but it will be told only in the best way for you to tell it. And he would always have something really interesting and challenging in there to draw. He would have me change the styles here and there because it's something he wanted to look like. There are a lot of long phone calls because I'm obviously long-winded and he can tell a good story. And we were blah, 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 talking about he lived in England and
I was going to ask,
US,
yeah.
And it was really super expensive.
Yeah, as opposed to now.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which
all tax write-offs.
And it was a tax write-off.
As opposed
to conversation. Yeah. It was, but I really loved those characters before I started working on the book, and I was very sad when I had to stop. And I remember drawing the picture of Dream crying after he had to kill his son, and I was crying when I did it because I was like, I only have one more issue left. Let's go. What am I going to do after I do this? Like, it was effortless to draw that book.
Wow.
And very few things since then, even including my own work, have been so effortless. It was just like, came
right
out. So, hopefully everybody else has an experience at some point in their working life that is so unique.
Anyone else? Because I know that we've got another panel coming up, so I'm just going to look here. Yeah, we should wrap up. I appreciate you guys coming out and doing this because I would like to still have you all on again on an individual one-on-one basis, if you'd be willing, on Word Balloon, so we could talk more. So. No, that's good. No, and as Brandon will tell you, digression is always welcome on my show, so that's good. And no, thank you very much. This has been great, and again, you guys do unbelievable work, and I'm really happy that new stuff is coming out. So congrats, and everyone, please take advantage of seeing these guys while the con is still going on, and thank you very much for coming.
An interesting panel with Phil Noto, Dan Brereton, and Jill Thompson. More coverage coming from the FX International Convention. If you're curious, they do have a website, fxshow.com. We hope you check it out. Word Balloon is brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com. They offer a huge selection of trade paperbacks, hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at up to 35% off, with orders over $50 receiving free shipping. Right now, you can get the Jonah Hex Collection, Origins, which includes art by Phil Noto. Regularly priced at $12.99, it's just $8.44. Also, Dead Boy Detective Digest, written and drawn by Jill Thompson. Regularly $9.99, just $6.49 at InStock Trades. And Dan Brereton's Nocturnals Volume 1 hardcover from Olympia Publishing. Regularly $29.99, it's just $22.49 at InStockTrades.com. And don't forget to visit their sister site, Discount Comic Book Service, at DCBService.com for all your pre-order needs. Major publishers are 40% off, and monthly specials are 45 to 75% off every month. Visit InStockTrades at InStockTrades.com and Discount Comic Book Service at DCBService.com. This is John Sutras. Don't forget, you can find Word Balloon all over the Internet. We're at Newsarama.com. We're also at iTunes, at MySpace.com/WordBalloon, ComicSpace.com/WordBalloon, and at all the various podcatching sites as well. So just type in Word Balloon on a search, and you'll be able to find us. Thanks again, and coming up, more coverage of the FX convention, but also some other interesting creator interviews on the way, some old faces and new faces. I think you're going to enjoy hearing what we've got to offer in the month of February. Until next time, Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2008.